Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the wake of the Tucson shooting, there's a new push to ban the kind of high-capacity ammunition magazines that helped Jared Loughner shoot 19 people without reloading before being tackled to the ground while reaching for a fresh clip. Is there a good reason besides mass killing for a magazine with over 30 rounds ready to go in seconds in the hands of the next Jared Loughner? In your hands, would limiting them rein in Second Amendment rights the Supreme Court has just affirmed? This hour on Point After Tucson, we look at the next debate on guns. You can join the conversation, gun owners. Do you need a 30, a 33-round magazine on a pistol? Should the sale of those be outlawed? Gun control advocates, what do you think of where the debate is now? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear in a moment from the New York Congresswoman who is about to introduce legislation to ban the sale of high-capacity magazines like those used by the Tucson shooter. Joining me first from Naples, Florida, is Robert Levy. He served as co-counsel to the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case of District of Columbia versus Heller, in which the court held that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to bear arms. He championed that historic decision. He's also chairman of the board of directors of the Libertarian Cato Institute. Robert Levy, welcome to On Point.
Nice to be with you.
Also with us is Paul Helmke. He is president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, former mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. He now leads the organization that is maybe the premier group in the country aimed at gun control. Paul Helmke, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Paul, I'll come first to you. There are a number of initiatives out there, not a whole lot of expectation at this point that they'll be passed. But there's Congresswoman McCarthy's, Peter King is saying, looking for restrictions that would not allow guns within 1,000 feet of who, Paul?
Elected officials, apparently. I really think the focus should be on Carolyn McCarthy's bill because Congressman King, great guy, but we should be focusing on protecting all American people, not just elected officials. But Congresswoman McCarthy's bill directly relates to what happened in Tucson on January 8th. The shooter did have a 30-round magazine. He was tackled when he went to when that magazine was emptied, and he went to put in a new magazine. If he had run out of bullets after a 10-round magazine, after 10 shots, that means there would have been 20 less bullets, 20 fewer bullets that were flying. That means less people injured, less people dead. Sure, there would have still been injuries. Congresswoman Giffords would have still been hit, but the amount of violence that he was able to do would have been less. And the ban on those high capacity clips, magazines that hold more than 10 bullets, that actually is something that we've tried before. It was in effect from 1994.
We've had it before, not just tried, but actually had it right under the.
We had it. It was in effect till 2004 and mm-hmm. was effective. By 2004, it was very difficult to find a clip that held more than 10 rounds. This isn't about the bad guys following the rules. People weren't making high capacity clips that were easily available to the general public.
But Congress did not extend that assault ban's weapon in 2004, and they have come back with a vengeance. We're hearing a lot about high sales even since the shootings in Tucson. Here's just one Tucson manager gun store owner. This is Steven Zacher, manager at Glockmeister, an Arizona store with branches in Mesa and Phoenix, talking with NPR last week.
Specifically, the G18 magazine, which is the 33-round 9mm caliber magazine, we've seen well over 1,000% increase in sales on that particular item.
Robert Levy, with us, you championed the right, the individual right to bear arms that the Supreme Court, as of a couple of years ago now, 2008, has made the law of the land. Do you see the Second Amendment as giving Americans an absolute right to magazines just as big as they make them, sir?
No, I don't. The rights that are secured by the Bill of Rights are not absolute. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law infringing on free speech, but we have all sorts of laws You can't shout falsely, fire in a crowded theater. You can't incite to riot. You can't lie in commercial advertising, and on and on. In the same respect, the Second Amendment rights are not absolute. But what the Supreme Court decision did was switch the burden to government. We now have a constitutionally secured right belonging to each individual. And if government chooses to compromise that right, then government has to jump through a number of important hoops. The first thing government has to do is to show that the regulation that they propose is not going to unduly impede the use of firearms for self-defense. Second, we have to be sure that what seems to be modest steps don't turn out to be the first steps down a slippery slope that do end up compromising core Second Amendment rights. And third, and I think most important in the context of these high-capacity magazines, the government has to show that its regulation is going to be effective in promoting public safety, and particularly when weighed against lots of reliable evidence that past restrictions have not lessened the incidence of gun-related crimes.
So do you expect to see restrictions on this, or given the judicial and political environment in this country today, do you think it's a conversation that will, you know, flame up here and pass?
As a political reality, I don't expect to see any restrictions.
Paul Helmke, what about you? You've pushed for much greater restrictions than these. What about this? Can even this be passed? Does it have a chance?
I think it does have a chance. It's going to take some leadership from the president. It's going to take the American people pushing their elected officials. But I think this is one, because it's narrowly drawn, it's just dealing with the high-capacity clips, again, a magazine that holds over 10 rounds. The fact that we have done this before, it was in effect from 94 to 2004. The fact that it relates directly to the shooting in Tucson. The fact that the target of the shooting in Tucson was one of their own, a member of Congress. I think given all those factors, this might be one that's treated more like the congressional restrictions on cop killer bullets in the late 80s, or plastic guns that don't show up in the metal detectors in the late 80s. Those two provisions made it through Congress with the Republican president with only a handful of votes against them. If the dialogue and the pressure from the public and the leadership from the president says, hey, this has nothing to do with Second Amendment rights, this is a clear public safety issue. You don't need these to hunt. You don't need these for self-protection. It's not a slippery slope, but it will be effective. It's been effective. Then I think we could get it through.
We saw high-capacity magazines and that shooting 9 dead at the Connecticut beer distributor just last summer. Of course, the Fort Hood shootings there. We saw Virginia Tech high-capacity magazines, and right on back, Columbine, and, of course, the Long Island Railroad shooting where Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy's husband died, also high capacity. What exactly would the legislation that she's going to introduce tomorrow, what would it do? Would it make Americans turn in their high capacity magazines, or just restrict the sale of new ones, or what exactly?
No, you wouldn't be required to turn in any magazines you have now, and that, I'm certain, is related to the increase in sales that are going on in gun stores. It would basically say that after the bill went into effect that it would be a crime to sell or transfer those high-capacity clips. So if you had some, you could continue to have them, you could use them, you couldn't transfer them to anybody else. Obviously, you would be able to make high-capacity clips available for the military and for police departments, but transfer, sale, whatever, to a civilian would be banned after this went into effect. And again, that's similar to what the language is similar to, pretty similar to what was there in 94. Although in 94, you were allowed to transfer the grandfathered clips. Here, you wouldn't be allowed to transfer any longer.
So it's not just the sale of new high capacity magazines that would be prohibited, but even like the gun show sale of used or previously owned magazines, not on
Correct.
Anymore.
Correct. You'd be allowed to use them for you put them in your collection if that's what you want to do, or use them if that's what you want to do.
If you own them already,
right? But the proposal is that no more sale or transfer of these high capacity clips.
Robert Levy, again, it's just a couple of pages. This legislation. Do you see slippery slope here, or does this look to you like a reasonable step as proposed?
Well, for starters, Ms. McCarthy has not explained how a ban on transfers of previously sold magazines is going to deter anybody except law-abiding citizens. Remember that after the assault weapons ban expired in 2004, we had the National Institute of Justice, that's a DOJ entity, that confirmed that assault weapons are rarely used in gun crimes, even before the ban. And criminals use handguns because assault weapons are expensive and they're difficult to conceal. We had the New York Times, no fan of guns, writing, this is after the assault weapons ban expired, and this is a quote, despite dire predictions that the streets would be awash in military-style guns, expiration of the assault weapons ban has not set off a sustained surge in sales or caused any noticeable increase in gun crime. We had 33 years in Washington, D.C., during which every single firearm was banned. And during that time, the city was the nation's murder capital. So when you have laws against murder that don't deter people, they're unlikely to be deterred by laws against owning guns.
But you heard the list of massacres, and I'm sure you know it. I mean, the Connecticut one last summer, Fort Hood, Virginia Tech, Columbine. These were all high-capacity situations where, you know, a lot of people died. Doesn't that suggest something to us here or not?
It does suggest something, but bear in mind that these high-profile killings are but a tiny fraction of 1% of all the murders in this country, and there are other European countries, Germany, France, Finland, Switzerland, also had high multi-victim shootings, and those countries have more strict laws than we do. Germany, for example, already has a requirement that you have to be 21, you have to exhibit a proficiency in skill, and you must prove that you have a need for a gun, and still they have these mass victim shootings. So the burden is on government. If they can show that there is no impediment to self-defense as a result of this ban and that the ban is likely to be effective, then I think a reasonable case can be made, and I do not believe that the Heller case or other Supreme Court pronouncements impose an obstacle to regulating high-capacity bans. But
Robert Levy, stand by there if you would. We have to take a short break right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the gun control push again to rein in high-capacity magazines, clips, ammunition magazines that can turn guns into Tucson-style crowd killers. We've been joined by Paul Helmke. He's president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, former mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana, joining us from Washington. Robert Levy is with us as well. He served as co-counsel in the landmark case, District of Columbia versus Heller, in which the Supreme Court held that the Second Amendment protects an individual's, not just the militia idea, but the individual's right to possess a firearm. He joins us today from Florida. 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Paul Helmke, we've seen gun rights advocates since the Tucson shooting saying, what's the point of banning the transfer, the sale and transfer of these high-capacity magazines? You know, you can always just carry in two guns, or, you know, you can just come with something bigger. I mean, he was caught reaching for the next clip, but he could have just carried two guns with smaller clips is the argument I'm seeing here.
It's again, we're in the real world, and we're looking at real world situations.
Yep.
In this real world situation, he had a 30 round clip. He was able to get those 30 bullets plus the one in the chamber out before he went to reload. He was stopped when he went to reload. He might have tried something different, but then it might have been easier to stop him a different way, or there might have been some other response. The bottom line is that when you've got a 30 round clip, you can get 30 bullets shot within a 15 second period of time. And your chance to stop that is when the person goes to reload. So what's the justification for having more than a 10-round clip? Police departments don't use those. You don't need those for hunting. If in terms of personal protection, you haven't stopped the bad guy with the first 10 bullets, they probably either left or you're probably already been overtaken. The only thing these high-capacity clips are good for is to kill a lot of people quickly, and there's no justifiable reason for them. And it's not a slippery slope argument. We're narrowly focused on this. It's something that it's not going to stop all violence. The congresswoman still would have been hit with the first bullet here. But when you have less bullets flying, you're going to have less violence there. I think this is one that makes sense. Unless you're expecting to have your house surrounded by a small army and you need all the ammunition and all the armaments you can get, there's no no need to have this in civilian life. I think it's it makes sense, and we should go ahead and do it, and then get onto the broader arguments about our background check system. How do we make the community safer? How do we try to prevent these sorts of mass killings from continuing? Not a full assault weapon ban, not a DC style ban, a narrowly drawn thing right now on high capacity clips, capacity magazines.
Paul Hemke, Robert Levy, stand by. Let's go to our listeners for a moment here. Jeff in Framingham, Massachusetts. Jeff, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there. I'm really glad that you bring this up because I've been in London, and I don't see people there quaking in their boots that they don't have guns to shoot. In France, people don't cry about the fact that they don't have a large caliber or large magazine weapons to use. The problem here is that there's this seeming madness about needing to have guns. And more importantly, needing to have large magazine guns. There's no real reason to have those magazine guns. The man who was talking about that criminals don't use large magazine guns is saying something false, because those guns that are made here with large magazine clips go across the border to Mexico, and they make a lot of use of them.
You say it's madness, Jeff, but in this country, compared to the UK or France, I mean, lots of people have guns. So is it madness, or is it, you know, reasonable self-defense when there are so many guns in this country? 80 guns for every 100 people.
If you look at the FBI statistics, it does not indicate that people were well served by having guns to protect themselves. I've been in situations which were dangerous. The guns did not help me in any degree. And if you look through the statistics, they don't do that. What happens mostly is that kids get killed playing with the guns that their parents have. It's not a protection.
Jeff, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate it very much. Let me get one more right here. Camden, South Carolina. Mark, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Mark. What do you think?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Basically, I would just like to say if the guns are not the problem, it's the people behind the guns. The regulations as far as obtaining a gun, they should be looked at very carefully. It doesn't matter if you have a 5-round clip or a 100-round clip. If someone wants to do bodily harm to someone else, they're going to do it.
But what about the scale, Mark? You saw how many people were shot how quickly in Tucson. I mean, it was about 15 seconds and 19 people shot, 6 dead. That's a lot of damage in a hurry. Do we need to make that available to every American?
I think that's beside the point. Just like the other guy was saying that if you don't have enough in one clip, you just carry another gun or another 2 or 3 guns. I think the best idea would make it mandatory for all elected officials and all teachers to carry a gun. That would stop if this guy knew that everybody in that entourage was carrying a gun, I guarantee you he would not have fired.
Mark, I appreciate your call. Paul, we've got rights here, and we've got safety here, and you've just heard some assertion that, you know, more guns will keep people safe. Armed teachers, says our caller in South Carolina. What do the numbers show on, you know, citizen safety and the prevalence of guns?
And I know other academics might dispute some parts of this, but generally academic research has shown that if you have a gun in your home, it's between 20, 21 times more likely to be used against you or a member of your family than to protect you. Generally, homes with more guns, cities with more guns, states with more guns, countries with more guns end up having more gun violence. And in terms of deterring the criminal, my organization is named after Jim Brady, President Reagan's press secretary. Mm-hmm. Nearly 30 years ago, he was shot in an assassination attempt on President Reagan. They were surrounded by Secret Service and D.C. police. It doesn't deter people. Arizona has some of the loosest laws on guns and concealed carry in the country. If that person went in assuming, thinking rationally in terms of deterrence, he would have assumed that someone in the area would have had a gun very quickly. It's people go and shoot police officers and in police departments and go into City Hall and kill people. The people that are doing these things don't act rationally. The one other thing I like to point out is, you know, we've had assassination attempts mm-hmm. in this country before. But look back in 1968 when Sirhan killed Senator Robert Kennedy. Only one person in that hallway, back hallway at the Ambassador Hotel, gets a bullet, Senator Kennedy.
In that very dense crowd that we've all seen.
George Wallace in 1972, assassination attempt by Arthur Bremer paralyzed Governor Wallace. Only one person hit in that parking lot. Back then, guns only discharged 6 rounds, maybe out of the revolver. Since that time, since 68, since 72, guns have become more lethal. These high-capacity clips are part of the reason. Sure, bad things are going to happen, but there's no need to allow that many bullets to fly that quickly.
Robert Levy, I want to come to you. Let me get a gun rights advocate in here from Houston, Texas. Tracy Larson joins us. Gun rights advocate. She blogs at The Well-Heeled Shooter. Tracy Larson, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, hi there, Tom.
So are you a gun owner, a pistol owner?
Actually, I do. I do have, without naming names, but I do have my own personal protection. It only has 5 rounds. It fits well in my hand, and it's powerful enough for personal protection without a lot of kickback. So it's something that I feel very comfortable in having in my home.
Are you familiar with these high-capacity magazines that can be fitted onto a pistol like the Glock that Jared Loughner used? Have you seen them?
Yes, I have. I've seen them at gun shoots I've attended in various states that I've been part of gun shoots.
For people who haven't, can you describe, how's it work? I mean, a pistol is not that big. You know, the grip is in your hand. Where do all those bullets go? What's it look like?
Well, it's pretty heavy. It's not something that I would say is for the average, the home, you know, for home use or personal protection. It does have a lot of power. It has a lot of kickback.
It's like an extension comes right out the bottom of the handle and goes on down another, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 inches, something like that?
Yes, it's not easily concealed.
So it
definitely has a lot of power.
Well, it's certainly got a lot of bullets in there, as Jared Loughner did. So here we are. Carolyn McCarthy is introducing this legislation to say no, 10 rounds should be enough. No transfer or sale of high-capacity magazines. You're a gun rights advocate. What do you think about this? Is this impinging on fundamental rights? Is it just common sense? How do you look at it, Tracy?
Yeah. From my personal perspective, as a gun owner and someone who does uphold and support the Second Amendment, I don't see the Congresswoman's bill preventing a legally able person from owning a gun. It's not taking away my right to bear arms. Back when it was part of the assault weapons ban of 1994, it didn't take away my right to own a gun then, and it won't now. I see this as, I would say it more of a sensible step in, you know, having rightful and sensible gun ownership. You know, one of the things that I was thinking when this, you know, when we're dealing with high capacity clips is maybe we have it fall under some of the same regulations as suppressors. Now, while all
suppressors,
states,
you mean a silencer?
Yeah, you know, like a silencer, exactly. You know, not all states allow gun owners to legally possess them, but those who can must apply through the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, who regulate the ownership of such devices. It doesn't mean that we can't own them, but there is a regulatory process that if you are legally able and allowed to own a gun, that you just go through a few extra steps. There is a little bit of a tariff that you do have to pay to own something of that. But it doesn't mean that a collector would be prohibited from owning something if they wanted to have it in their own personal gun collection. But for me, as someone who uses guns for target shooting, I'm not a hunter, but I have many hunters in my family. I don't see why a gun owner needs a high-capacity clip.
Tracy Larson in Houston, please stand by. And Robert Levy, Paul Helmke, we have with us right now Representative Carolyn McCarthy, Democratic congresswoman, represents New York's 4th Congressional District. She plans to introduce legislation tomorrow to ban the sale transfer of high-capacity magazines like those used by the Tucson shooter. Her own husband was killed and her son injured in 1993 on the Long Island Railroad. Big magazines involved right there. Congresswoman McCarthy, thank you very much. Welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, and I've been listening to the conversation, and the woman that just spoke about, you know, being a gun owner and having hunters in her family that have guns, I mean, that's the whole idea. I've been talking to a lot of NRA members, and they actually agree with me. So, I mean, I think this is the debate that we have to have, but you have to understand the bottom line is we can save lives. You know, not only is this a public safety issue, it's a healthcare issue. Over $1 billion a year is being spent on those that survive from shootings. And what we can do is we have to have a decent conversation about this. We're not taking away the right of someone owning a gun. As was explained by Mr. Levy, it's a constitutional law now, and the Supreme Court came down with that. Many of us that have been trying to do gun safety for all these years thought, okay, that issue is off the plate now, but that doesn't mean that we can't look at issues to try to protect the citizen in this country.
You've got personal experience here. How were high-capacity magazines involved in your own husband's shooting death?
Colin Ferguson, who did the shooting on the Long Island Railroad, had large capacity clips with 15 bullets in each. Like in Arizona, he was able to get off two clips before three people were able to tackle him. He had two more with him. As Paul Henke had said earlier, you know, we can't stop all the killings. My husband would have been killed. My son was still been shot in the head. But with that being said, those that were killed on the other end of the train would not have died.
Robert Levy is with us as well. You know, he argued in the D.C. versus Heller case successfully, of course, to affirm that right of individual ownership of guns. He says he's worried about a slippery slope scenario here. Put some restriction on these magazines. It may be reasonable, he says, to do it, but for gun rights advocates who say, well, you do that and pretty soon, you know, you're going to have more gun control. Many Americans might like to see that, but the NRA and very powerful allies do not. What do you say to them?
Well, the bottom line is we already have a Supreme Court ruling that the Second Amendment basically states that a person has a right to own a gun. So we're not even debating that issue anymore. So the slippery slope is something that they've said for years. That's not true. We have the Supreme Court behind that. But it doesn't say, and as was mentioned earlier by Mr. Levy, that there can be, through the government, regulations that can be put into place to make it a little bit safer.
What about the argument that there are so many high-capacity magazines out there now in circulation and owned by private citizens that even if you pass this legislation, they're going to be all over the place?
Well, with that being said, you still have to look to the future. If the law gets passed, and I'm hoping that it will, and I do certainly have hopes that it will, they will have a the new ones that would be manufactured would have a serial number on it. So basically, you would know that the new ones are out there. But it's eventually, you would still have out there less of them out there. You know, they wouldn't be able to be sold at the gun shows without the background checks, which is a totally another whole story, where people can buy guns and ammunition and the clips without even going through a background check.
Congresswoman, when you came into Congress after your family was hit so hard with gun violence, I mean, are you disappointed all these years later to be, you know, arguing, and many people are saying even this doesn't have that great a chance, just to control high-capacity clips? Did you have bigger aspirations when you came into Congress and when it came to gun control?
Well, listen, I came in because it was a personal reason. It affected my family and certainly the families here on Long Island. But you can't give up on this issue because I spent my life as a nurse, and that meant trying to save lives, and I'm doing the same thing in Congress now. But I think that, you know, when you talk about, you know, and the Brady Center has been terrific on it and trying to get the educational part out and educating American people, but it comes down to 10,000 people are killed every year. That's just on homicides. And then if you add into the amount that commit suicide or accidental deaths, that comes to 29,000 to 30,000 a year. We can do a better job on having gun safety issues.
Have you got the votes on the high-capacity clips?
Not yet, but I haven't started, lobbying one by one. That's what I do.
Does it look possible? Is the NRA going to find it tooth and nail or not?
You know, they probably will. I'm sure they will, because they'll come out with the slippery slopes, reading the blogs that are out there about me already. A lot of false information is out there. But I also agree that the president has to take a stand on this.
Do you feel safe championing this as an American congresswoman today?
I'm sorry?
Do you feel safe being a champion of this as a congresswoman today?
I do. I some of the legislation that I've seen put out there, it only protects the members of Congress.
Maybe not enough. Carolyn McCarthy, we're out of time. We really appreciate your being with us today. Thank you so much for joining us, Representative Carol McCarthy. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the gun control push again to rein in high-capacity magazines, clips for ammunition, the kind that can turn guns into Tucson-style crowd killers. We saw it in the hands of Jared Loughner in a matter of seconds. 31 rounds kicked off there, and 19 hit, 6 dead, bullet through the brain, of course, of Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. Well, with Tracy Larson from Houston, Texas, gun rights advocate there, blogs at the Well-Heeled Shooter. Robert Levy is with us. He argued for the kind of decision the Supreme Court made in District of Columbia versus Heller, which brought that individual right, affirmed that individual right. And Paul Helmke is with us from the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, president of the campaign there. Let's get some callers. Sean in Lexington, Kentucky. You're on the air, Sean.
Hi, yes. I wanted to just bring up the issue of self-defense. Mm-hmm. And make 2 points on that. The first being, how many actual documented instances of self-defense have been covered?
The depended on a high-capacity magazine to be successful, you mean?
Yes. You know,
okay.
In the balance of crimes perpetrated, you know, there are criminals using these to perpetrate a crime, how many people are actually using them in defense?
Okay. Another question as well, Sean, or is that it?
Well, a second point would be, in the matter of this instance with Jared Loughner and Gabrielle Giffords, the fact that we have someone in custody charged with the crime, the defense put up by the citizens in that crowd were manual, didn't rely on weapons, and in a lot of the other crimes, mass shootings, the criminals actually had the opportunity to kill themselves.
Sean, let us pick those up. They were indeed manual, and that even in a state where gun ownership is very, very lightly overseen as well. I appreciate that. Paul, let me come to you on the question of how often a high-capacity magazine with this kind
of... Tom, you know, a lot of points have been made, and
yes,
I frankly
Robert.
Feel like I haven't had a chance to respond to any.
Oh, jump in. Can you respond to the issue of how often this has come into play, a high-capacity magazine has come into play in self-defense? Can you think of an instance where somebody needed, you know, that magazine with 30 rounds in it to defend themselves?
A few responses to some of the points that have been made. There are about 500,000 gun-related crimes in the United States each year. Reliable evidence indicates that the defensive uses of weapons are about 3 to 5 times that number. And those defensive uses are most often just brandishing the gun, not firing the gun. We don't have any evidence on how many of those defensive uses involved high-capacity crimes. I'm happy to hear Representative McCarthy and Paul Helmke not worried about the slippery slope, and I'm sure we can count on them to oppose any restrictions on concealed carry when they come up down the line. I should say also that if you are a Korean shop owner and you are faced with the L.A. riots, you may very well find it necessary to have a high-capacity weapon. In Virginia Tech, you may recall, there were more than 200 shots fired. The guy reloaded 10 to 15 times and methodically massacred 32 people. So the size of his magazine would not have made a heck of a lot of difference. In Fort Hood, Major Hassan fired 100 rounds over 10 minutes.
And he had 30-round high-capacity magazines. But you're saying he reloaded a lot.
With respect to the statistics that Paul Helmke mentioned, the biggest studies were in 2004, National Academy of Sciences, 250 journal articles, 99 books, 43 government publications evaluating 80 gun control measures, and researchers could not identify a single regulation that reduced violent crime, suicides, or accidents. CDC the year before reported on ammunition bans, restrictions on acquisition, waiting periods, registration, licensing, child access prevention, zero tolerance. CDC's conclusion, none of the laws had a meaningful impact on gun violence.
If you had been on the parking lot, if you had been on the ground in Tucson last weekend when those bullets were flying, might it have made a difference to you if it was a 10-round magazine or a 30-round magazine, Bob?
It might well have made a difference, and that is why I have been very careful to say that these regulations that have been proposed might make sense. The burden, however, is on government to show that there haven't been requirements for these kind of magazines for self-defense purposes, and that the restrictions that they propose are likely to be effective. That last burden is one that I do not believe government is going to be able to make. There's no evidence that these restrictions are going to be effective.
Paul Helmke, first to the caller's question one more time. What about instances of self-defense where a high-capacity magazine was critical? Robert Levy says, well, if you had been in the L.A. riots, a shop owner there, maybe then. This mob defense against mobs comes up in what I've been reading.
Actually, some of the people that do these studies that say there's all these defensive uses based on some survey instruments, and they come up with huge numbers. One of the things they and there's disputes about that, but one of the things they do say, as Robert just said, is that a lot of them involve brandishing. It means basically showing that you have a weapon back. And if you're showing that you have a weapon back, I don't think it really makes any difference whether it's a 10-round clip or a 30-round clip that you're brandishing to scare the guy off. In terms of self-defensive firepower, most of the law enforcement officials that I've talked to, and again, as a mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana, I used to run a police department. I talk regularly to police officials. The most effective self-defense weapon you can get is a shotgun. You basically don't have to be able to aim real well, and you can get a lot of firepower out there very quickly. In terms of the studies that Robert means, Robert refers to, there are competing studies. There are studies that show that sensible restrictions do make sense, and the studies are out there. I still use a little common sense talking to police officials again. After the assault weapon ban was allowed to expire in 2004, they started seeing more assault weapons used, more high capacity clips used. The assault weapon ban, and I don't want to focus on the general assault weapon ban, but the fact that it banned these high capacity clips for a 10-year period meant that by 2004, it was very difficult to obtain a high-capacity clip. And if they're banned again, they are going to become rarer and harder to get, which means we're going to see less of those, and that means that there's going to be less bullets flying, and that's going to protect us.
Tracy Larson in Houston, what about fellow gun owners who say to you, come on, Tracy, you know, what if there's an angry mob at my door? Don't deny me this. I can picture a situation in which I might want to have 30 rounds instantly at hand. What do you say to them, Tracy? You don't want it, but what about those who might?
No, I actually talked with a number of my friends who are gun owners over the weekend leading up to the show, and most of them, as much as they love their guns, I do live in a state that has many gun owners. They just don't see the need for having a high capacity magazine or clip, and they really just don't see that they're going to have a mob at their door. We do have quite a bit of police presence. I mean, I live in a major city. Those who do live more in rural areas typically have more than just one gun. So most of my friends who live in the rural areas don't have the high magazine capacities because it's of no use to them.
You can't put it in a holster. You've got to have it, you got to carry it free, or it just won't fit with that.
Yeah, and you're not going to be hunting deer, elk, or bear with a 33 bullet clip. It's just not a real sensible use that type of firepower.
Paul Helmke, what about Robert Levy's warning that you're not going to be able, under the latest Supreme Court rulings, that this just is not likely to pass muster, that the government, what it will need to show is more than it's going to be able to show if it comes to arguing for this?
Well, the Supreme Court still hasn't decided and declared what the burden of proof is going to be on these things. They haven't set up the standard for review, and that's one of the topics that will continue to be argued as court cases come along. But, you know, we feel that if there's a legitimate government purpose and they show, you know, a rational basis that this ties into something that we had before, that worked before, that that demonstrates some sense of logic, the fact that some professor someplace hasn't done a five-year study and gotten a peer review publication of it, I don't think is going to make a difference. That's not the standard for laws we look at, whether the academics, after a long period of time, have signed off on it yet. I think that there is clear justification for a move like this. Again, it's been on the books. It can tie rationally to crimes such as occurred last weekend in Tucson, and I think with that, the courts would uphold it.
Let's get a call from Debbie in Tell City, Indiana. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hello. I think that the high-capacity rounds should be definitely outlawed. Only the police or FBI should have those type of weapons. I have my own weapon. It only fires five rounds, and I never keep the first round chambered. So I have four chances, and so far I've never had to even think about using it. But I do want to keep my right to own that weapon.
Have you talked with other gun owners in your circle since the Tucson shootings, Debbie, about that high-capacity clips and what would they think? I mean, are you alone in this, or a lot of people around you talking that way?
Everybody I know, just the men want guns for hunting. They have high-powered rifles, but they don't shoot 31 clips. And that is totally, you know, I would outlaw hunting if the government allowed that. I would want to outlaw hunting. No one needs that but the police.
Debbie, I appreciate
the power to protect us.
I appreciate your call. Robert Levy, are there any limits at this point? I mean, can you own anything? What is not available to the general public in terms of guns these days with the expiration of the assault weapons ban?
Well, there are all sorts of limits. I mean, we know, for example, that certain people can be regulated, and that would include minors, would include people with records of violent crime, crazy people. Certain weapons can be regulated. We don't want seven-year-olds carrying weapons of mass destruction in front of the White House. Certain circumstances can be regulated. Every federal retailer of guns has to have a license. Guns are heavily regulated across the United States.
Heavily regulated, though, I mean, I understand the terms you just described, but in terms of what I can buy, it seems to be just about everything at gun shows.
No, it's not just about everything. There's been a ban since 1934 on automatic weapons. That ban remains in effect. It was not even touched by the assault weapons ban. The assault weapons ban related to semi-automatic weapons, the kinds of weapons that are used by tens of millions of Americans for hunting, for target practice, for self-defense, even for Olympic competition. And the argument that the police are going to protect us, look, you know, in most of the major cities in the United States, you can get a pizza delivered before you're going to get a response to a 911 call. The police can't be everywhere. And I'd also like to respond briefly to Paul Helmke's point that these regulations serve a rational basis. The Supreme Court in the Heller case categorically rejected rational basis scrutiny. That has been a rubber stamp for virtually all legislative enactments. The court rejected not only rational basis, but even Justice Breyer's interest balancing test. And something higher is demanded, said Justice Scalia, when an express constitutional right is at issue, particularly a right that the court has deemed to be fundamental. So at a minimum, the court's going to adopt some version of heightened scrutiny, and that means the burden will be on the government.
Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska. Jerry. Jerry, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that any time a tragedy like what happened, you know, in Arizona happens, police go after the gun laws, but nobody ever stops to think of all the little things that we took away from our social network to help kids along the way, and not to mention, I won't even go into mental health issues. Look how bad we defunded that across the whole nation, and then all of a sudden we got the first law I hear about they want to come up with, don't come within 1,000 feet of a government official. I'm thinking, how is that going to be enforced?
So what about this one, Jerry? Would you restrict high-capacity magazines or not?
I would not, just simply because, you know, that deal with what happened in the LA riots, you know, like you say, you got a store owner with a
crowd full of people. You think that truck driver that got pulled out of his truck might have been able to keep his truck and
Yeah, we remember that image, but my goodness, does that mean we have to have high-capacity magazines walking around next to us all over the place? Appreciate your call, Jerry. Paul, what about, part of the gun ownership rationale, at least in certain political quarters, is not just self-defense against crime. It's this sort of whole, stand-up-to-tyranny idea. Mm-hmm. Does that come into play when you talk about high-capacity magazines? Is that legitimate?
That is what some folks on the other side are talking about. They're not really concerned about the Korean shop owner during the L.A. riots, and I'm not even sure there were situations where there were high-capacity clips that were used or involved there. They're really picturing the idea that if the U.S. Army or tyrannical government somehow comes to take them away and lock them up in FEMA-run concentration camps, that they've got to be able to fight back. This is the imagery that is used, and
not the fact, but the imagery.
Mm-hmm. The imagery that's used on the other side. I mean, that's what they're fearing. It's not something legitimate. And the one thing I always point out when folks say we need the Second Amendment in order to fight the tyrannical government, I say, you mean you're talking about my son-in-law in the U.S. Army? You're talking about the folks that I hired for the police department in Fort Wayne? That's who you're saying you want to be shooting back against. And that part bothers me significantly. Again, for self-defense, you don't need this kind of a weapon. For hunting, you don't need this kind of weapon. Police departments, by the way, don't even buy this type of a weapon. Some SWAT teams, maybe, but the general police officer is not. You can't holster this sort of a weapon easily. It throws off the balance in the shooting slightly. This is a weapon that I think should be treated the same as plastic guns, cop killer bullets, the fully automatics that have been highly restricted. There's no need for this to be in the available for the general civilians.
We've just got half a minute. I asked Carolyn McCarthy, let me put it to you. When you got into the gun control advocacy business, did you think you'd be arguing out on the margins like this about high-capacity magazines? Is that where you hoped to put your shoulder to the wheel?
I hope we can go beyond high-capacity clips and have a full discussion about this. The congresswoman's husband, an astronaut, in his business, when the Challenger exploded, there was a national commission, presidential commission, to look at the causes to prevent it from happening. That's what we need to do with gun violence. Presidential commission, let's look at all of the issues out here to see if we can reduce gun violence in this country.
This legislation to be introduced tomorrow. Paul Helmke at the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Robert Levy, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate your insights and your perspective here.
Thanks very much.
And Tracy Larson, gun owner in Houston, Texas. Thank you, Tracy, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.